Pro-Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. Pleased and proud to have James Clapper with us. He is the former Director of National Intelligence, which is the basically the Chief Intelligence Officer of the United States, because as a director, he's responsible for overseeing all the agencies and then directly reporting to the president what he has found. Former Senator Coates from Indiana is now the Director of National Intelligence. And as we get started here, I should mention that the director has a new book out called Facts and Fears, Hard Truths from a Life in Intelligence. And he's going to be in Chicago on May 29th, next week, 5:30 p.m., University of Chicago Institute of Politics. And if you'd like information, politics.uchicago.edu is the website for that. That's politics.uchicago.edu. And it's a free event at Quadrangle Club. And definitely, seeing you speak on this issue at this time in American history, Director, is an important thing. And I just want to ask you a question. Now, Dan Coates, well known to Chicago area people because he was a senator from Indiana, did a lot of Chicago area media here talking to the northern half of his state. Are you confident that, especially a longstanding public servant as Dan Coates has been, are you confident that there are enough people left in this administration that will oversee truth and justice in the American way, for lack of a better term here, in case the president wants to just serve his own needs?
Well, I'm a big fan of Dan Coates. Not a professional intelligence guy, but certainly he has all the right values and right instincts. And I think he's done a great job under, challenging circumstances. These days, I think the intelligence leadership has an extra burden because they are in a position where they sort of have to provide top cover for the rank-and-file employees, the intelligence community, to keep turning out the intelligence and keep telling truth to power, whether the power necessarily listens to that truth or not.
And if it's about that power, I mean, and that's where we get to the circumstance we find ourselves in over the last 24 hours, where the president is now demanding a meeting on Thursday in which the president and Devin Nunes and the Republican senator from the House from the Senate Intelligence Committee and are going to be meeting together with the Deputy Attorney General and the head of the FBI, and they're going to be going through intelligence that has been gathered as it pertains to, and it's a little unclear what they're asking for here, but they're asking for intelligence as part of the Russia investigation and I'm assuming they also want to know who was this guy who was the informant who the president refers to as a spy inside his campaign, which most people, I think, including you, Director, would probably argue using the term spy doesn't apply here.
Well, I don't think it does. What he did is, and unfortunately his identity has been revealed now, which I think is not a good thing, but that's where we are. As has been revealed in the media, what he did is pretty benign. And when you compare that to the other tools that the intelligence and law enforcement communities potentially have to use, this is pretty mild stuff. I think the main thing, though, is what was the objective? Why did the FBI do this in the first place? And the objective, and the reason they did it, was not to spy on the Trump campaign, but what to determine and understand what the Russians were doing to try to infiltrate, if they were, the campaign, and what leverage were they trying to exert. So the focus here is on the Russians. I would argue that what the FBI was doing was their job, and they were actually helping to protect the campaign as a part of our larger political process.
And so Republicans say there was a political motivation here to spy on the actions of the Trump campaign, and they want a full investigation. I assume you don't agree with the idea of an investigation, but would there be harm in doing it? Do you think that it would be harmful in some way? How would you push back against that?
Well, I think as an overarching comment here, I don't think it's a good idea for the president to get involved in directing investigations. That's a norm or standard that's been abided by previous presidents for decades. And I think there's a real bad precedent set here, and we could, you know, start down this slippery slope here. One of the important attributes of our system is a free and independent, and I emphasize independent, Department of Justice and FBI. So if politicians start getting involved, whether Republicans or Democrats, in managing and generating investigations because they don't like one that's going on, that's we're in a bad place as a country if that kind of thing continues. And this is that's why I think is a really bad precedent.
Are you surprised that there have been so many members of Congress at this point that seem to be running air cover for the president in this?
No, I guess I'm not. Not too much surprises me anymore.
Does that surprise you that not much surprises you anymore? I mean, and that's a serious question. I mean, I think all of us feel a sense of disquiet about everything that's happening here. Even if you are a staunch supporter of the president, this is an unusual moment. I mean, this.
Yeah, it is.
And I wonder if you're concerned. Because let me approach this question in a different way. Two of your colleagues from when you were DNI, you've got General Hayden, who was running, he had the NSA and the CIA, and then you have John Brennan, who was a CIA director at the end.
Right.
And John Brennan has been, you know, very vocal on Twitter and other places, but he spoke to Showtime for that show, The Circus. And he said this.
I know things you don't know, Joe.
No, I know that.
I'm not going to share.
As you look at this, you kind of feel like you can confidently say, this is just a sliver of what is going to eventually be known. Is that your gut?
I would presume that there's a lot on the domestic front involving U.S. persons that is known to Bob Mueller and his investigative team. I think it's going to be rather traumatic in many respects for a lot of people. And I think they're going to realize that their past actions are going to catch up with them eventually.
Do you agree with that statement?
Traumatic.
Well, I agree with the fact that consistently Bob Mueller and his team have been way ahead of everybody else. He knows a lot more than we do, and there is more to come. I'll give you an example of the indictment that was made public in February against the 13 Russians and some Russian entities. I had no idea about that. That was a complete surprise to me and many others. And I suspect that there are going to be other surprises that we don't know about now.
Wow. I want to ask you also, I'm sure you've seen Michael Caputo coming out, the political consultant, Trump advisor. He's been speaking out, particularly on Fox, but he's coming out trying to say there was more than one informant and that the FBI isn't the only agency that came at the campaign. He's saying he wants to tell the truth. He actually mentions you by name, and he says he just needs clearance from his attorney to be able to talk about all of this. What do you make of what he's saying to anybody who will listen?
Well, I don't know what exactly he's talking about, and to be clear, I didn't know about this informant at the time. Contemporaneously, I wouldn't know about informants. The FBI has hundreds of informants, which is a legitimate and important a source of information for them. They have very strict rules and protocols on managing and using informants. So I don't know what Mr. Caputo is talking about or what other entity was involved in this besides the FBI.
Let's talk about the book here for a moment, Facts and Fears. And, you know, as we're talking about, there are a number of books that are coming out now from people who, you know, have had long and storied careers as yourself and talking about government and talking about ethics and talking about where we are and trying to, I think, reestablish what True North is. And there have the United States government, as I go through your book, and I believe this is true, that the United States government in the era from 1945 to the present has tried to act, for most of the time, has tried to act in terms of intelligence and in terms of intelligence gathering and military options and decisions, has tried to act in a lawful manner. There have been some exceptions, there's no question, but has tried to act in a lawful manner with a true north of standing by our values, our democratic with a little d values in the United States. Do you believe that that time is over?
Well, I hope not. I mean, there is an argument that global dominance by the United States that actually started after World War II, you know, is slowly coming to an end, and we're now in a more bipolar, a multipolar world, which may or may not be a bad thing. But I agree with the general premise that in general, the United States intelligence community has tried to abide by the law and what our values and standards are. Now, there have been exceptions to that. Certainly, there were when I was a young pup in the aftermath of Vietnam. That was my war. I spent two tours there. So there have been, and we've responded to that by laws that have been passed and the establishment of the oversight committees. In each house of the Congress, one of which is weakened right now because it's so partisan. The Senate Intelligence Committee has stayed bipartisan, and when they are, that's when they're credible. And when they're not bipartisan, they're not really credible. The very important responsibility of those two committees, because what the Intelligence Committee does is inherently secret. So that gives rise to mystery about what we do and whether what we're doing is legitimate or not. So those committees have to act as surrogates for the citizens of this country to ensure that what the Intelligence Committee is doing is moral, legal, and ethical. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that no other country on the planet has those mechanisms to safeguard against abuse by the Intelligence Committee. Have we made mistakes? Sure. It's an organization of great, dedicated, and well-meaning people, but they're people, and people make mistakes.
What advice would you give to Gina Haspel as she takes over the CIA, or Mike Pompeo as he takes over state? These are Trump appointees. Haspel, a little less, part of the Trump world. Pompeo, very much a part of the Trump world, coming from Congress through the Trump campaign. But in terms of winning over the support of the workaday folks in those agencies that are not political. You know, they may be Republicans and Democrats, but their work is not political. How can they feel that they're not going to be impacted by the severe politics of the moment?
Well, that's to my earlier comments about the extra burden that is placed on intelligence leaders like Dan Coats, like Gina, in the intelligence community to provide that top cover to ensure that that political business doesn't work its way into the workforce that actually produces the intelligence that our policymakers need. So I know Gina very well. I've worked with her, and I think the world and all of her, and I think she'll be a great director. And she has the steeliness, I think, to push back when there is risk of intelligence be politicized. So I'm counting on her to do that. As far as Mike Pompeo goes, I think actually State Department is a better fit for him than CIA. And I can't conceive of him, an activist that he is, continuing to preside over the dismantlement of the State Department. So I think it's a good thing that he's moved there, because I think he will, over time, restore the State Department, which really taken some hits.
How hopeful are you there will be a deal with North Korea to denuclearize?
Well, not very. Having dealt with the North Koreans myself when I went there in 2014, I can't conceive of them just giving up what they've spent a lot of time and treasure to achieve, which is a nuclear capability. They for them, that's their ticket to survival. They realize their weaknesses and that no one would pay any attention to them if it weren't for that nuclear capability. And when you conjure up the notion of the so-called Libya model, which they brought up with me, you know, when I was my first talking point that I was told to recite to them was, you must denuclearize. And that was a non-starter with them. And they brought up, hey, look what happened to Muammar Gaddafi, who gave up negotiated away his weapons of mass destruction. Look how it turned out for him. So I can't I can't conceive of that. The other point I'd make is when you say, when someone says denuclearize the Korean Peninsula, well, for the North Koreans, that could mean that we have to restrict our nuclear umbrella that has protected not only South Korea, but the region for decades. So that could mean, in their mind, no B-1s, B-2s, or B-52s on the Korean Peninsula or in operational proximity. In other words, denuclearization for the North Koreans could easily apply both ways.
Wow.
Would you say we're better able to fend off foreign intervention in our elections today than we were a year ago, 5 years ago? Are we on this? Should we feel comfortable that things are moving in that direction?
I think a lot has probably been done, given the fact that, you know, first, our election apparatus is a state and local activity. It's not federal. You know, and a lot of states are very sensitive about any federal involvement. So I think in terms of mechanically or technically securing the voter apparatus, there have been a lot of progress. The key thing, though, and this is hard, is educating the electorate to what an adversary like the Russians do to manipulate and influence public opinion and voter decisions in this country. And the magnitude of the massive effort they made to influence the outcome of the 2016 election is pretty scary. So the big thing is educating the electorate, and that starts with a firm, clear declaration and a sense of urgency that only the president can impart. And so far, that really hasn't happened. So lots of good things going on an individual basis by various agencies in the federal government at the state and local level. But I don't see a sense of urgency that I think can only come when it's impelled by the president.
Well, how are you going to have a sense of buy-in by this president if he believes that by acknowledging that the Russians were in any way effective, that it delegitimizes his own position as president? I mean, we're caught in that Hobbesian choice.
Ro, you have exactly put your finger on the issue. When we briefed then-President-elect Trump on the 6th of January in Trump Tower, I think, you know, it was a cordial, professional session, but right away, he just couldn't accept evidence of Russian meddling because it cast doubt on the legitimacy of his election. And he has sustained that ever since, to this day.
All right. Director Clapper, thank you so much. James Clapper, Facts and Fears, Hard Truths from a Life in Intelligence is the new book. You must get that. And you can see him next week, May 29th, 5:30 p.m., University of Chicago Institute of Politics, Quadrangle Club. The website to get tickets, and they're free, is politics.uchicago.edu for more information right there. All right. Director, thank you again. It's a great honor to have you.
Oh, and Anna, thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it. All right, we have got...